Welcome to the Calder Farmstead, your place for news, analysis, and shenanigans from the American Hockey League.
Faceoff blocked by the Condors. Jones top of the point, fence into the slot. A shot and done!
Point long drive, Jake Kamenik, what a stop by Matisse with the left pad! Oh, there was a scramble in front of the net, denied was Matt Schichter by a miraculous piece of net finding by Matisse Kamenik.
D-Lander from the red line sends it in, Hofer in the best net, he stops it, Hofer looking, Hofer firing toward the empty net, he scores! Are you kidding me?
Now, with 9 minutes gone in overtime, the Bears breaking out. Right side with Fair. Brooks Light cutting to the net. Fair, let's go! Let's go! Let's go!
Hello, hello, hello from Allentown, Pennsylvania.
And Chicago, Illinois.
Welcome to the Calder Farmstead Podcast, episode 136 for Tuesday, April 18th, 2023. If you are hoping for a podcast featuring a reasonable schedule for planting in the spring, we are not going to be much help. This is an American Hockey League podcast. My name is Sean O'Brien from StatsTrack and the AHL's only league-wide analytics guy.
And I'm Sarah Avampato from Full Press Hockey and SB Nation's Canes Country.
And as always, we thank you for tuning in with us. If you're new to hearing Sarah and I talk about hockey, we're going to break down the first round of the AHL's 2023 Calder Cup playoffs and one matchup from the second round of the Calder 2023 Calder Cup playoffs. We both watch a lot of AHL games. We talk about what we see when we watch the film, as well as use some advanced stats to help us break it down. If that's new to you, you may want to head over to our podcast feed or YouTube channel, wherever you're listening to us from, and check out episode zero. It's a short primer on some of the stats we're going to be talking about, as well as how we view what's important on the ice. So if you're new to some of the more advanced hockey stats terms like PDO or the point shares model, or newer hockey terms like controlled zone entries or Royal Road, go check that out so you better be able to pick up what we're putting down. I promise it's not that nerdy or technical. It's only 20 minutes. And let's be honest, you waste 20 minutes trying to figure out why some AHL teams get home playoff games and others don't. It doesn't make sense. It never will. You'll never get that time back. So next time, why not spend a little more time with us talking hockey? Sarah, there's not much going on in league news. They're announcing some awards, but as a show that does its own award show and a much more legitimate one, we don't recognize those here. So we're just going to get right into it. We are previewing the Eastern Conference playoff first and part of second round. Basically the playoff games that are starting today, the 18th into, you know, the rest of the week. This has been a fire drill for us, so please bear with us. We will do our best. But here, let us start as we always do, Atlantic to Pacific. We're going to start with the Charlotte Checkers versus the Lehigh Valley Phantoms. The schedule for this series, Tuesday, April 18th, 7 p.m. is game one at Charlotte. They play again Thursday, the 20th, again at 7 p.m., also at Charlotte. And if necessary, a game three on Tuesday, April 21st, 7 p.m. at the Bojangles Coliseum in Charlotte. Not a single weekend game. Definitely how we want that scheduled. All right, I will kick us off here talking about the Charlotte side of things. Let's look at how they got here. Their season record was 39 wins, 33 losses. Their last 10 games, they went 4-6. Their net power play was 19.6%. That was sixth in the AHL. Their net penalty kill was 85.4%. That is seventh in the AHL. If the Charlotte Checkers win this series, it's going to be because they had clean exits, clean exits, clean exits. With Alex Lyon powering the Panthers into the playoffs, say that five times fast, it's going to be up to the tandem of Mac Guzda and or JF Berube to hold down the forts. That does not inspire confidence, and asking either of them to steal the series for Charlotte is asking too much. So Charlotte needs to make their lives as easy as possible, and that begins and ends with recovering rebounds, dump-ins, loose pucks, etc. in the defensive zone, and getting play going the other way with control. Meaning, not glassing out punts to the neutral zone, but tape-to-date passes, leaving the defensive zone with firm possession. If Charlotte can avoid the Phantoms' forecheck and control the flow of play, it'll greatly help the workload the Checkers' netminder has to face. because defensive zone turnovers almost always lead to high danger scoring chances. And that usually leads to goals for your opponent. Punting the puck into the neutral zone off the glass might relieve pressure for a second, but it's like pulling out a weed and not getting the root. Like, yeah, you got it out for now, but it's going to come right back. Second thing, if Charlotte wins this series, it's because the bottom six contributed. At the beginning of the season, Charlotte looked like a deep and dangerous team, but as the season wore on, a lot of that depth that was expected to contribute in a big way just kind of underwhelmed. They didn't disappear, but guys like Logan Hutsko, Henry Bowlby, Grigori Denisenko, Alexei Haponiemi didn't make the progress we thought they would as young prospects on the younger end of the spectrum looking to make that next step forward. Lehigh Valley is stupid deep on offense and can roll four lines that can score. If Charlotte wants to win the series, they're going to need more than Riley Nash and Jerry Mayhew to do the heavy lifting. It's going to need to be score sheet contributions from its bottom two lines, plain and simple. And last but not least, if Charlotte wins this series, it's because they were able to feed off the crowd. Charlotte was 11th in attendance in the AHL this season with an average of 6,595 tickets sold per home game. It's definitely not the actual attendance, but still, there were good crowds there. That's their fourth best season for attendance in their AHL history and the best since 2018-19. Watching a handful of Checkers games this season, I've been very whelmed by the atmosphere in the building. I think the Checkers do their best to put on a good game atmosphere, and the fans showed up, and they're loud-ish. But that's not going to cut it in the playoffs. The Checkers are right in the middle of the Atlantic Division playoffs, a.k.a. the phone booth knife fight. And if they want to stay alive, that atmosphere in the Bojangles Coliseum needs to be something the players can feed off at all times. An intimidating atmosphere can boost a team. Look at Laval last season. They were a game away from going to the Calder Cup Finals, and that scene inside Place Bell unquestionably helped them. That was a haunting atmosphere if you were an opponent coming into that building. Charlotte fans need to do their part in bringing that kind of playoff atmosphere for the Checkers. No Zach Doughty and no Alex Lyon, and they're in the middle of the toughest division in the AHL. This is all hands on deck, and that means more than just the players needing to bring it. That means fans, game day ops, concession vendors, Chubby, everybody. You guys need to bring the atmosphere so that way when, you know, it's going into double overtime and Bob Rotruck is leaving because it's 11:01 p.m., that building is still loud, it's still full of energy, and guys are getting energized from the crowd. All right, Sarah, talk to me about the Lehigh Valley side of things.
All right, so how did the Lehigh Valley Phantoms get here? Well, first off, their season record this year, 37-35. Over their last 10 games, they were 6-4. The net power play was 18.5%, which was 10th in the AHL. The net penalty kill, not nearly as good, 76.3%, which was last in the AHL. So if Lehigh Valley manages to pull out a win in this series, it's going to be because Airshan was their best player. We said it last time we talked about Lehigh Valley on the show and discussed their chances of going on a playoff run. This team is good, but it's going to go as far as their goaltending takes it. And while Samuel Airshan has struggled down the stretch, he's been reasonable, you know, a passable AHL goalie in net this season. But this is the playoffs. Reasonably passable performances really need not apply here. If Airshan doesn't outduel the Charlotte netminder in this series, it's hard to imagine Lehigh Valley gets to the second round. That's as simple as it is. They also need to make sure that their forwards are in shooting lanes. The D needs to box guys out. Two of the top three Charlotte Checkers in shots per game this season are defensemen. The Checkers are okay with having Lucas Carlson and Santtu Kinnunen let it fly from the distance. To counter that, the Phantoms are going to need to make sure that they are getting shin pads in those shooting lanes. The defense is behind them, needs to box out the Checkers at the net front and the high slot, looking to make layered screens, get tips and deflections. Charlotte's had a lot of success on shots through traffic this year. Some of that, it's just good old-fashioned puck luck. Some of it is also undisciplined defensive play from their opponents. Lehigh Valley, they can't control puck luck. That's not the way it works. But they can dictate tight defensive play, and that's what's going to be necessary here if they're going to give their goaltender a chance at fulfilling his role. Lehigh Valley also needs to be the more physical team. Neither team here has an inherent size advantage. In terms of average team weight, Lehigh Valley's 31st, Charlotte's 25th. Both sides also have smaller, more skilled forwards. Hepaniemi, Hutsko, Mayhew, Nash, Denisenko, all listed under 190 pounds. Zamula, Denoyer, Lexel, Brooks, Cooper Marody, all listed under 190 pounds as well. So it kind of evens out. Both sides have their bigger physical players as well. Charlotte has Franco, Giles, Bunneman, guys like that. Lehigh Valley has Garrett Wilson, Ronnie Attard, Kevin Connaughton. So again, things kind of even out. But I think it's important for Lehigh Valley to be the more physical team out there. One, all of these games are in Charlotte, and being the more physical team tends to keep the crowd from getting too excited about what's going on out there. Two, the smaller guys on Charlotte are more valuable to their team than the smaller guys on Lehigh Valley. So if you can disrupt their game with physicality, the impact on Charlotte's going to be bigger than the impact on Lehigh Valley. Most importantly here, though, Lehigh Valley needs to be the more physical team without taking penalties. In case you zoned out like 2 minutes ago, literally the worst penalty kill, net penalty kill in the league. So they need to stay on the right side of the line here.
All right. And last but not least for our preview here is the X Factor. And as Sarah hinted at here, the X Factor is special teams. Both sides have a power play that can do damage and change a game, but the biggest gap is on the penalty kill. Lehigh Valley's penalty kill this season was very bad, which was a departure where it's been the last handful of years. You have to go back several seasons to find a Lehigh Valley penalty kill that finished in the bottom third of the AHL even. It was slightly better against Charlotte in the regular season, 78.8% net PK versus 76.3%. So, you know, marginal improvement. But they had games where they killed 5 of 5 or 5 of 6 against Charlotte this year. So it is possible for them to step it up here. In this tight of a series, Lehigh Valley's ability to either stay out of the box, step up and kill penalties is going to be huge. On the flip side, Charlotte's power play helped them win games. They have a negative even strength goal differential in the regular season, so they need that power play to function efficiently and pull out this series. So those special teams are going to put their thumb on the scale one way or the other and tip this series, but it's up to both teams to be the one to try and grab that and turn it on their side. All right, let's get to picks here. I will go first. If Zach Dalpe and Alex Lyon were in Charlotte's roster for this series, I'd probably take Charlotte with all the games in Charlotte. But they're currently not, and it doesn't look like they're coming back. So I'm going to go Lehigh Valley here in what I think is a very close series, but one that is dominated by offense. Sarah, what say you?
You know, Lehigh Valley all season, they're a team I've been more down on than you have over the course of the year, but I have to admit that the Alex Lyon factor is huge for Charlotte. It is hard to see that team going very far if they don't have their starting goaltender. So likewise, I'm going with Lehigh Valley here. I think that they're just going to have the upper hand with Charlotte not having their best on the roster available.
And the model agrees with both of us, but barely. The model... I worked up a playoff model here very quickly, but these are 10,000 sims of every game in the series with the schedule and home ice factored in. Lehigh Valley is a 51.5% favorite, so skin of their teeth, but the model is picking them to win as well. So all three of us on the same side, congratulations, Charlotte, you made it to the second round. That's how this works, right?
Yes, absolutely.
All right. That is our preview for Charlotte and Lehigh Valley. Let us move on. Sarah, tell me about Springfield and Hartford.
All right. So Springfield and Hartford, they also have the wonderful three-game series. Only this time, both the teams get home games. This series starts Wednesday, the 19th at 7:05 p.m., very specific, at Springfield. Game number two, Friday, April 21st at 7 at Hartford. And then, if necessary, Saturday, April 22nd, 7:05 at Springfield. So first up, we're going to take a look at the Springfield Thunderbirds and how they got here. They were 38-34 on the season. They were 6-4 over the last 10 games of the season. The net power play was 19.7%, good for fifth in the AHL. Net penalty kill was 85.4%, or eighth in the AHL. If Springfield is able to win, it is going to be because they didn't take Hartford lightly. In this case, Hartford just had Johnny Brodzinski and Louis Domingue called up to the NHL. Why, you ask? Well, Johnny B. Good. He was an emergency recall because the Rangers can't field a full team lineup without him. Louis Domingue isn't necessary, though, so that kind of looks like good old classic New York Rangers screwing Hartford here. These are important pieces for the Wolfpack. Make no mistake about that. But this is a team that's clicking right now, and they've been playing inspired hockey. Springfield got a firsthand look at it on Saturday, where they pulled out a 1-0 win despite being outshot 35-21. So regardless of where Johnny B. Good and the Spicy Pork King both are, Hartford fought hard to get into the playoffs. They won 8 straight to seal their spot. Springfield is also 30th in the AHL in the regular season in win percentage, with a lead going into the third period. So they have struggled mightily to close out games this season. They're not a team to be trifled with, though, and if the Thunderbirds take them lightly, their season's going to be done. Also important, forecheck. The biggest key to Springfield's run to the Calder Cup Finals last season was their ability to put on basically a masterclass in forechecking effectiveness, retrieve dump-ins and loose pucks in the offensive zone and in the neutral zone. I see no reason for them to deviate from that strategy this year, especially as they should have a significant team speed advantage in this matchup. The best place to put that to use is in transition and winning races to loose pucks. Zach Jones, he's undersized. Adam Clendenning, he's slow. If you put pressure on them with physicality and with speed, they might make some mistakes with the puck in their own end that the Thunderbirds can then turn into goals. This all worked well for them last season, and it should drive them to the second round if they can do it consistently in this matchup with Hartford. They also want to make sure they're agitating Will Cooley. He is their best sniper for the Wolfpack. He's more of a power forward kind of player, but he can absolutely rip pucks and just beat goalies cleanly from the mid-range. It's gotten better this season, but Cooley still does have a temper to him and has multiple fights this season, as well as games where he took more than one penalty. As someone who is vital to the Wolves' pack offense, getting him riled up and taking penalties greatly is going to benefit Springfield for two reasons. One, never in the history of hockey has a player scored a goal from the penalty box. Doesn't happen that way. And number two, the Wolfpack penalty kill is not very good to begin with. So my thought would be get someone in his face after whistles, chirp him, make sure your finish checks when he has the puck, because if you can get him to lose his coolie, that's a big advantage for Springfield. So Sean, once you've recovered from that wonderful pun, what's the deal with the Hartford Wolfpack?
So let's look at the Hartford Wolfpack and how they got here. Their season record is 35-37, last 10 games, as Sarah mentioned. They won 8 of them. They went 8-2 down the stretch. Their net power play was 13.5%. That is 27th in the AHL. Their net penalty kill was 82.1%. That was 21st in the AHL. Not great on the special teams there. If Hartford wins this series, it's because they don't let Joe Hofer see pucks. It's not a mystery that Joel Hofer is a damn good goalie in the AHL and will be on our ballot for Best Goaltender Award at our award show at some point in this offseason. At this point in the season, if a goalie of Hofer's caliber can see the release of the shot, he's going to make the save 99% of the time. Hartford has struggled heavily to beat Hofer, and my strategy for improving that is simple. If he can see it, he's going to stop it, so stop letting him see it. And that means more than just having guys like Matt Rempe or Will Cooley camping out at the front of the net like they're a Call of Duty sniper. It means guys using more deceptive looks when shooting. It means using T-Bird's defensemen as screens. It means changing the angle on the release of shots. If you don't know what I mean by that, it means pulling or pushing the puck just like a foot to the left or right before you release the shot. If you go watch an Austin Matthews highlight reel, you'll see that he does this, changes the angle of the release right before he rips it all the time. And that last little change in angle matters to goaltenders. Making all those adjustments and focusing on those areas on offense can help turn the tide and make Hofer look more human. because if Hofer has clear sight lines to shots, it's going to be tough. It's going to be a tough road to victory for Hartford. Second, if Hartford wins this series, it's because they got special teams to play to a draw. Speaking of tough roads, this is a big task, but not an impossible one. Hartford's special teams have not been spectacular all year, some of which we have covered in depth on this show, what's gone wrong with their power play and their penalty kill. Springfield's special teams have been very good this season. In a long series, it'd be hard to contain that difference in quality, but this is a best of three, and in the short term, this is an achievable goal. Not to mention, the Hartford Wolfpack have battled the Thunderbirds to a draw in six of their regular season games this season, at least in terms of special teams battling to a draw. They're 2-4 in those six games, but two of those went to a shootout. So it's really 2-2 plus two games that were decided by something that won't happen in the playoffs. So there's at least some proof of concept here that they can win short term just playing special teams to a draw. However, Hartford managed to get special team. However, Hartford manages to get special teams to the draw, doesn't matter. Whether that's not taking penalties, whether it's scoring on the power play, whether it's killing penalties, it all amounts to the same thing, because the Wolfpack can't keep Springfield from scoring power play goals. The road to the second round looks near impossible. And third, Hartford will advance to the next round if they win game number one. Yes, it is possible for Hartford to win the series by winning games 2 and 3, but that is a treacherous proposition. And I'm sure the XL Center will be as rowdy an atmosphere as possible, but if Springfield wins game one, that drops Hartford's chance to win the series to 21.7%, according to the model. That means they also have to go back into Springfield for game three on the third game of a 3-4. That's not a recipe for success against a team that has maybe a few more horses than you do. Especially as if you lose game one, you come home and all the pressure is on you to win that game in front of a big crowd. And nothing says a team will grip their sticks too tight quite like that. You win game one, you take a big series lead, you head home to Hartford to win a playoff series in front of your home crowd for the first time since May 15th, 2015. That is a moment your fan base needs. Hartford, you need to win game one so you can come home with a crowd at your back and take that series. The X factor for this series, the thing that's going to be able to put its thumb on the scale in one way or the other, it's going to tip the way this series goes, is Dylan Garand. Garand's season hasn't been the best, but I feel like he's improved a lot as the season has gone on. Case in point, his last three starts, 20 saves on 21 shots against Springfield, 35 saves on 38 shots against Providence, 34 saves on 35 shots against Lehigh Valley. Those are his last three starts. He hasn't had a whole ton of playing time down the stretch at Hartford, but he has looked good. In general, his puck tracking is excellent. He does a good job of finding his angle and his marks and is rarely behind the play. He shows great poise. He's shown good rebound control at times. He's excellent at maintaining the right depth, getting off his posts as play progresses. Without Louis Domingue, the Wolfpack are looking for a spark in net, and Garand has the tools to provide them with one. It's pretty clear that Joel Hofer is going to put on a show at the other end, but if Garand can go save for save with him, Hartford can steal this series. It's not a given that he's going to do that, though, which is why his performance has the ability to tip the scales from one side to the other here. That's what an X factor is, and that's why he's ours. All right, Sarah. That's the case for both sides. Let's get into picks. I'll let you go first here. Who are you taking and why?
I'm taking Springfield on this one. Joel Hofer has been great. The Thunderbirds have, you know, anyone who they were going to get back from the NHL, they've got them now that St. Louis's season is over. We talked about Springfield recently on the show, and this is a team that can be scary. They look like they've learned the right lessons from last season, from, you know, getting the whole way to the end and not quite making it. They brought back a lot of players who got close to winning last year before running into the Wolves. I think that there's a case for Hartford, but Springfield's pretty much the easy choice for me. How about you?
I think if Johnny Brodzinski, Johnny B. Good, and Louis Domingue were in Hartford, I'd probably have to spend a long, hard time thinking about who I take for this series, because both teams would seem neck and neck, 50-50, flip a coin. They currently are not, and that's a big difference maker to me. To be clear, I wish Hartford wins the series. That fan base has been deprived of a playoff run and joy for what feels like a very long time. And Springfield has had nice things as recently as last season. So in terms of the, like, whose fan base needs this win more, Hartford absolutely does, and I hope they get it. but I have to go with my head here. I'm going to take Springfield, sadly. And I want to take Hartford. I really do. But I'm going for accuracy here, not hope, and I'm going to take Springfield. And the model is on our side as well. This is not boding well for us. I don't like when all three of us agree. Springfield is a 55.4% favorite, which, I mean, given that they're important pieces out for Hartford and two out of the three are in Springfield, that's not as big a gap as I would have thought. But still, 44.6% for Hartford to win the series, that is very much a puncher's chance. You will take that. All right. We're going to take a break here. After the break, we will get to the North Division playoffs. Yes, plural for matchups. If you're just here for an Atlantic Division series, thank you for stopping by. Don't forget to subscribe wherever listening to us from so you get episodes in a timely fashion. Also, check us out on social media. Links to our social media and more can be found at our Linktree page at linktr.ee/TheCalderFarmstead. If you can't spell The Calder Farmstead, I can't help you. We're going to run some ads, pay some bills. We'll be right back. Stay tuned. And we are back from break. Let's get right into it. We are going to the North Division to discuss both matchups. Let's start with the one that is technically a first round matchup. The other one is strictly not, but anyway, we'll get there when we get there. Let's talk Utica Comets versus the Rockets de Laval. This series schedule starts game one Wednesday, April 19th, 7:05 p.m. at Laval. Then they cross back over to the border Friday, April 21st, 7 p.m. at Utica, and Saturday, April 22nd, 7:05 p.m. at Utica. That extra 5 minutes, clutch. I'll start with the Utica side of things and how they got here. Their season record was 35-37, which seems strange that they were fourth in the North Division with a losing record, but last 10 games they went 4-6. Their net power play rank was 11.5%. That was last in the AHL. Their net penalty kill was 80.35%, 27th in the AHL. If the Comets win this series, it's because Alexander Holtz breathes life into the Comets' power play. In case you missed, 30 seconds ago, the Comets' power play has been abysmal this season. Part of the reason for that is for 58 of the 72 games this regular season, they lacked a truly scary Ovechkin-like shooter. Alexander Holtz is very likely going to play in Game 1 and almost certainly going to be an immediate impact, not just in general, but specifically on the power play. What's also beneficial for the Comets is Laval's very poor penalty kill structure, which we did a deep dive on back in episode 127. So if you want to hear more in depth about why it fails, go check that out. But in summary of that, 15 minutes we dove in on it in four sentences, basically Laval uses an outdated PK structure known as the diamond or 1-2-1. That is porous against defending power plays, but does create a lot more shorthanded scoring opportunities. And that's why Laval is one of the worst PKs in the league, but is leading the AHL in shorthanded goals. Those things are related. But basically, it has them stick a player right in front of Alexander Holtz's shooting lane, but opens up the bumper spot in the middle to the point where he's basically wide open. And in the past, Laval's defender has been able to kind of cheat and kind of bit half cover the bumper, half cover the guy on the half wall there. With Holtz's threat of a shot, though, you can no longer, make that kind of math, as Holtz is either going to smoke you for not being in the shooting lane or the bumper is wide open again. So Holtz being there is going to open things up for the Comets power play one way or the other, by hook or by crook. Second thing, if the Comets win this series, it's going to be because they win the first period. First period of all the games, but ideally the first period of the first game. In games that the Comets went into the first intermission with a lead, they won that game 86% of the time. That was fifth in the AHL, which is good. In games where Laval went into the first intermission with a deficit on the scoreboard, they won that game 22% of the time. That was 24th in the AHL. What that says to me is winning the first period is very important to Laval and obviously should be a point of focus for the Comets. Get out of the gates hot. Get ready to play, get an early lead, because if you do, Laval has struggled heavily to play catch up this season. And last but not least, if the Comets win this series, it's because they leave Mason Gjertsen in the press box. Look, I understand. I understand why fans love Mason Geertsen. He's physical. He's willing to drop the gloves with basically anyone at any time for little to no reason, and that's entertaining. I like a good scrap now and then myself. But in this series, Utica, a team that's 22nd in scoring in the AHL in the regular season, is playing Laval, who's second in scoring in the AHL in the regular season. Mason Geertsen getting on the ice isn't going to help Laval score less. In fact, probably the opposite. He's not going to help Utica score more. In fact, quite the opposite. Mason Geertsen getting on the ice isn't going to help you win games in this series. At the very best, it's going to do nothing. At the very worst, he's going to take bad penalties that your 27th ranked penalty kill has to go kill against the 7th best power play in the AHL. And he's not valuable on defense, plain and simple. Yes, he's entertaining. He mixes it up. But there's not enough value in that in the rest of his game to justify him putting him on the ice. Case in point, Ryan Warsawski understood that last season with Kyle Marino and the Chicago Wolves. Marino is another guy very similar to Mason Geertsen, a goon who's just there to stir things up. And both of them know that this is their role. Warsawski put him in the lineup in only 2 of Chicago's playoff games, and he played maybe 10 total minutes in the playoffs last year. Both of them were in very physical brawl-style games in Milwaukee. And Sarah, as someone who was there live covering the series, like it was clear that Warsawski knew that he was putting Marino in for those physical games, and once it calmed down, it was time for him to come out of the lineup.
Yeah, very, very clear.
This would be a moment where Kevin Dineen would be wise to take a page out of that playbook. This isn't the regular season anymore, and Mason Geertsen is not someone I want on the ice with potentially my season on the line. That is what Utica needs to do. Sarah, tell me about Laval and how they got here.
All right, so Laval this season, they were 33-39. Over the last 10 games, they were 8-2. The net power play was 19.2%, which was 7th in the AHL. Net penalty kill, you hinted at it a little bit, 80.3%, 28th in the AHL for Laval. If Laval wins this series, it's going to be because the power play keeps rolling. Laval's power play the last 5 games of the regular season was 35.7% net power play. And of course, that is unsustainable in the long term. But a 3-game series is basically the complete opposite of long term. Utica's penalty kill is also quite bad and is just one spot above Laval's in the regular season rankings for net penalty kill. However, Utica is literally the best team in the AHL at not taking penalties. Whether you want to credit that to bad officiating or the Comets' discipline, it all amounts to the same thing in the end. Especially as if the series goes to a 3rd game, the chances that Laval gets more than 1 power play are pretty slim. As we detailed in our last episode, as AHL playoff series go longer and longer, penalty calls get less and less as refs basically swallow the whistles. So it's going to be important for the Rocket to make the most of the limited power play opportunities they get in order to shift this series back into their favor. It's going to be hard to imagine the Rocket winning this series if Utica can somehow keep their power play under wraps. Also, if the Rocket win this series, it's going to be because they set the tempo. They have been the number one team in game pace in the AHL all season. This is a team that loves to attack on the rush and look to get north-south in transition early and often. And when you have the team speed to do it, that makes sense to weaponize it. Utica, on the other hand, near the bottom of the game pace category, tends to favor a more slow, grinding, low-event kind of game. They can play the counterattacking rush game if they need to, but that's not what they're really built for, by and large, and they don't have the team speed to support that style. So if the Rocket can control the pace of the series, crank it up to 11, that plays into their strengths in a big way, and it's going to help tilt a closely contested series in their favor.
All right, let us talk about our X factor, the thing that is going to be able to put its thumb on the scale and tilt the series one way or the other for someone. And that is goaltending. Now, normally you could point to goaltending in any series and say that's an X factor, but here it feels especially potent. Nico Daws and Caden Primeau, who I think are both pretty clearly going to be the ride or dies for both teams here in net, had very mild seasons. Daws put up a .904 save percentage, Primeau a .909. Neither of those are terrible, but they're nothing to write home about. Both are capable of getting hot and stealing a game or two in a series, and both have shown they can blow a game, too. Caden Primeau gave up 5 to Cleveland in a critical game for the playoff race just 11 days ago. Daws gave up 5 to Syracuse in a critical game for the playoff race just 6 days ago. Which goalie rises to the occasion and makes one save more than the masked man 200 feet from him? I have absolutely no idea. Goaltending is voodoo and playoff goaltending is double voodoo. But it's hard to believe that one of Dawes or Primo decisively wins this goalie duel here and their team loses the series. One way or the other, their performance will put its thumb on the scales and unquestionably tip it to their side or the other, depending on how it goes. That is why goaltending is our X factor for this series. And that is all we have. It's time to make picks down and dirty. I will kick us off. This is a series between two teams that I, full disclosure, do not have a lot of faith in, backed by goalies who have been hot and cold all season long and recently. The Rocket got a bunch back from Montreal, but Utica is getting back guys from injury and Holtz and Hallinen. It all kind of washes out to me, so I'm going to put my faith in coaching here. I like JF Hull, but I'm a bigger believer in Kevin Dineen. I will take Utica in a sloppy but closely contested series, but I do not feel good about taking either side. Sarah, how are you doing?
Yeah, this is one that, like, I don't feel great about my pick, but I'm picking it anyway, and I'm also going with Utica. I just don't know that I trust Laval enough to think that they can get through this series. That said, if, like, you know, time traveler me comes and says, hey, guess who won the series? Laval won. Like, I won't be surprised. This is one that I think can really go either way. But I think that, you know, yes, Laval also went almost the distance last season, but I think that Utica just has the slightly upper hand. I really like them getting Holtz back into their lineup. So I am going with Utica, but if I'm wrong, it's not going to be the end of the world.
And the model backs that up. The model is on Laval. Laval is a 51.9% favorite. So razor thin margin there. But as we both described, we expect this to be a closely contested, but not necessarily the prettiest series. This is probably going to be an ugly one. I could see, like, game one going into triple overtime or something of that nature. But a very thin series, and the first time that you and I are on a different page than the model. So let us continue on. We're going to talk about the Syracuse-Rochester round two series for the simple reason that it starts on Friday, and I don't feel like recording for a third time this week to cover that series. So we're just going to lump it in here because for whatever reason, the AHL is like, yeah, we will totally start a second round series before the first round is completely closed and finished.
Yeah.
Brilliant. Sarah, tell me about Syracuse and Rochester.
Yeah, we can't possibly make these teams wait any longer to get their series started, apparently. Like you said, this series starts on Friday the 21st. Game one is 7 p.m. at Syracuse. Game two is the next day, Saturday, April 22nd, 7 p.m. at Syracuse. And then they got to wait like a whole week to play again because game three is Friday, April 28th, 7:05 p.m. I love the specificity here at Rochester. Game four, if needed, is Sunday, April 30th, because that's how it happened, 3:05 p.m. at Rochester. And then the final game, if needed, it's also like a whole darn week later, Saturday, May 6th. Is the final if needed game of this series, 7 p.m. at Syracuse. I hate everything about what I just said. I hate it.
Five game series that could take 2 weeks.
Yes. Yes. This is a totally normal thing to do. This is absolutely how a professional, anyway, okay, that's a whole other tangent for like later. We're going to look at the Syracuse crunch first and how they got here. Syracuse's season record was 35-37. They were 5-5 over the last 10 games. Net power play was 15.8%, good for 20th in the AHL. Net penalty kill, 82.4%, 20th in the AHL. So at least something's consistent around here. If the Syracuse Crunch managed to win this series, it's going to be because they get steady, good goaltending. Hugo Ahnefeldt has not been great down the stretch, honestly. He had one game since St. Patrick's Day where he allowed fewer than three goals in a game. They have Max Lagasse as well. He has three, which is better, but still far from ideal. Getting consistent goaltending has been a struggle all season, as both goalies have just balled out, stolen games, and then put up a stinker and cost their team a game. Is all of that on the goaltenders? No, it definitely is not. Syracuse is below league average in terms of defensive environment in the AHL this season. But this is the playoffs, though, and fairness to goaltenders basically gets thrown out the window. If the Crunch win this series, it is because they got consistent goaltending and it was consistently good. That's the point that you need to focus on, because you can get consistently bad goaltending and we won't have to worry about the series taking 2 weeks. They'll also win this series if they win the special teams battle. It is unfathomable to me that a power play that has Barry Boulay, Trevor Carrick, Gage Gonsalves, Simon Rifors, and all, like, is 20th in the AHL. That's not how it should work. It is almost equally unfathomable that the team with such good two-way forwards like Gabriel Dumont, Gabe Fortier, Felix Robert can be 20th in killing penalties. More than that, Rochester is no slouch at special teams, and the power play clicking is a pretty big part of why they win games in general. So if the Crunch win this series, not letting Rochester win the special teams battle is going to be a big reason why. So, Sean, you've got the look at Rochester. How did they get here?
They finished the regular season at a completely dead even 36-36. Winning is winning, losing is losing. I don't want to hear about shootout losses. Their last 10 games, they went 6-4, so a little bit better than even on the season, or on the down the stretch run here. Their net power play was 17.2%. That is 13th in the AHL. And their net penalty kill was 84.4%, 12th in the AHL. If the Amerks win this series, it's because they limited Alex Barry-Boulay. Barry-Boulay finished second in the AHL in points, fifth in primary points per game, and first in even strength points per game. His nearest active teammate, Simon Rifors, finished 77th. In primary points per game, for comparison. And Alex Barry-Boulay was involved in 56.3% of Rifers' points. So it's not exactly as if his tie didn't raise that boat as well. The Emmerichs have actually done a decent job defending ABB this season, too. He's only scored 1 goal and 8 assists against the Emmerichs in 12 games this season. But that doesn't make it less critical in the playoffs, especially as I'm sure ABB is going to treat playoff games with a different level of intensity than he did a regular season game. If the Amerks can keep him in check in this series, they'll have a good shot to win. If the Amerks win this series, it'll be because they get power plays. We talked about this at length in our last episode, so if you missed that, you can go check it out, because I don't see the sense in repeating myself an entire segment of the last show here. But in short, Rochester struggled to win games when it didn't score on the power play, and it struggled to win games when it didn't even get 4 or more power play attempts. In the playoffs, as the series goes on, power plays become less and less, and Rochester struggled to outscore its opposition 5-on-5. So the power play is going to need to, at minimum, have opportunities if the Amerks are going to pull out this series. And last but not least, our X factor, what is going to put its thumb on the scale and tilt the series one way or the other, is third period play. And now you could probably think, oh, third period play is important in every playoff series. And yes, that's true. But it's definitely more important in this one. Both Rochester and Syracuse have not been great at closing out games. Syracuse is 18th in the AHL in regular season at win percentage when leading after 2 periods. Rochester is 30th. But, to their credit, they're 7th in the AHL in win percentage after trailing for 2 periods. Syracuse is 21st. But Rochester is also 28th in third period goal differential. Syracuse is 9th. As if third periods weren't critical enough, both teams have had their ups and downs closing out and coming back late in games. That should make this a fun series as we go into third periods and having that feeling that this is still anyone's game. But it's going to be chaos for the teams playing the game. But winning the third period and making sure you lock down a lead, or if you're losing, the opposite of that, is going to be crucial to who wins this series. All right, Sarah, it's time for brass tacks. We got to pick winners here. I'll let you go first. Who you like?
All right. This may be a little recency bias, because I feel like I've watched one of these teams more recently than the other. But I am going with a Syracuse Crunch. Sure, Alex Barry-Boulet hasn't been able to crack the NHL, but he has been dominant this season. I think he can help propel Syracuse forward. I just believe in them a little bit more as a team than I do in Rochester, who I think has, as we've talked about, some gaps that they need to focus on. But I'm picking the Crunch. I think that they have enough offensive firepower to make it happen here.
I think for me, like, these teams seem like they're mirror images of each other, and then also at some points feel like they have a lot in common. They both have decent but not great depth. Their goaltenders are just okay. They have weird opposite struggles on special teams. They have weird opposite struggles in third period play and important parts. But one side is Alex Barry-Boulet and the other doesn't, and it's hard to overlook when one side has just a much more dominant player than anyone on the other side. I like Brandon Biro. I don't know if he plays in this series. Like, the Amerks have good depth guys who could, you know, show up out of nowhere. But it's hard to see, you know, a bona fide star at the AHL level on one side and the other one not have a counterweight and being able to call the series totally even. I'm going to take the Crunch. But again, I think this is close. I think it's sloppy. I think it's probably going to be fun. So at least we have that going for us. Which is nice. The model, on the other hand, disagrees with both of us, Sarah. It gives Rochester a 50.7%. Like, yep, we are out here scraping coin flips. This is going to be a tight one. And because it's five games, we'll definitely at least get to see a little bit more action here. But yeah, this is going to be a tight series. All right, Sarah. That is it for the preview portion. Do we have any closing thoughts here from the Eastern Conference playoff preview from you as a whole?
I just hope everyone has fun and that someday we understand how these things are scheduled.
I have so many questions about that. Like, okay, all the games need to be in Charlotte, but like none of them are on weekends.
Yeah.
The Rochester Syracuse series is the best of five that could take 2 weeks to play. What are we doing, guys?
Yeah,
we had one day between the end of the AHL regular season and the beginning of the
right,
playoffs.
Like, let's just
research and write and preview all of this. Love it. Great job, guys. All right, Sarah, take us home.
That is it for the show. Thank you so much for watching and or listening. Spoiler alert, if you want to care about the Western Conference, stay tuned because we're going to get to that in the next show. But for now, thank you for watching, listening to our Eastern Conference playoff preview. The Calder Farmstead is a part of the Full Press Radio Network. You can listen to this and several other great hockey, sports, and sports entertainment programs all at www.fullpresscoverage.com. Just click the podcast drop-down menu in the top right portion of the website and enjoy.
And if you guys are enjoying the Calder Farmstead, please make sure you subscribe to get episodes in a timely fashion. Also, if you're listening on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or Amazon, or you know what, even if you don't normally listen to one of those and you're like whatever podcast platform you're using that's not a major one that I'm just assuming the Chinese government is monitoring you on, like, go jump over to Apple. It's the same podcast. Just click the stars buttons. Let us know how we're doing. Doing so helps other people find the show. Your reviews help us improve it. You can also follow the show on social media at Calder Farmstead on Twitter, at The Calder Farmstead on Instagram and Facebook. All of our social medias do not post the same content. There is some stuff that goes out on one that doesn't go on others. So, you know, if you're looking for the fun memes we post, they may not be all over the place. Links to all of that and more can be found on our Linktree page at linktr.ee/TheCalderFarmstead. Big thanks to Adrian Drake, who made our theme music. You can find him on social media at AD_dysfunction. That's AD_dysfunction. So he can make music for you too. Sarah, where can the people find you?
Well, my name is Sarah Avampato, and you can find me representing Full Press Hockey on Twitter at Right Said Sarah. That's W-R-I-T-E, said Sarah with an H. You can check out my writing over at Full Press Hockey, where I talk about the Ontario Reign, or at Kane's Country, where I talk about the Chicago Wolves. Sean, where can people find you?
I'm Sean O'Brien. You can find me on Twitter at SeanO'Brien81. That's SeanO'Brien81. I'm also on Instagram at SeanO'Brien_81. My Instagram is not very active, but you can see my entire jersey collection on there. It's saved as a story for Jersey of the Day. My Twitter is much more active, mostly hockey, but occasionally random takes about pop culture and the world around me. You can find my stats work, including where you can see all the percentages for this model, and eventually a cool money puck looking graph that shows every team that's remaining and what their chance of winning the Calder Cup is from this point forward. Eventually I will get there as soon as we're done researching these previews and a bunch of other stuff. You can find all of that on my Tableau page at bit.ly/datadumpandchase, all lowercase, all one word. Thank you guys so much for tuning in. For Sarah Avampato, I am Sean O'Brien. Please, please, dump and chase responsibly.